This is Voices of Our World. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. Have you had enough bloodshed? Enough violence? Well, happily, you're not alone. As we continue to see numerous examples of how violent solutions to conflicts usually only make things worse, a silent trend is actually happening underneath our very noses. Would you believe that the world is actually more peaceful now than it ever was? Statistics show that despite the violence seen repeatedly on our TV screens, the number of violent conflicts throughout the world is somehow decreasing. Author Mary Wynne Ashford has studied the secrets behind conflict resolution and has written a fascinating new book titled Enough Bloodshed, 101 Solutions to Violence, Terror, and War, which suggests alternative methods to resolve some of the most bitter disputes on the planet. And we are pleased to speak with her today on Voices of Our World.
When I first read your book, I was shocked you were so optimistic about how our planet could indeed solve these problems. What causes this faith in humanity, despite all the negative events that are happening?
You know, it's so interesting. As I was writing it, I was going out and giving public speeches about nuclear weapons and how terrible it is that we still haven't got rid of them, and that I was feeling terribly discouraged. And just as I was doing the final bits of the book, I came across a research paper that came out last November that shows that, in fact, war has gone down by 80%. The big wars, the genocides and major wars, are down by 80% since the end of the Cold War in 92, and that lesser wars, the internal civil wars, are down by 40%. And the dictators that have been toppled now number 60. I couldn't believe that. I was trying to count them up for writing one of the solutions, and I got to about 19. I had no idea that there have been these profound changes. So then I did have the courage to say in my book, we are in a global revolution. The only reason that we don't know it is that we're bombarded with news stories that tell us about the current wars, which have not ended. I'm not saying it's time to let up. It's time now to really work to prevent war and to bring these wars to an end, because we're on a roll.
Your book stresses nonviolent means as the only way to truly resolve a conflict. But many of those in power have in fact used violence to further their own causes and has been quite effective. How do you convince a victim of violence that violence doesn't work?
I think that's a really good point, because again and again I get people in audiences saying to me, but violence works, you know, bombing works. In fact, it doesn't work. What it does is it destroys the community, but that community does not give in. And until the victims, until those who are vanquished actually acknowledge defeat, there is no end to the conflict. We can see it with the Israeli and Palestinian conflict, which is going on and is so heartbreaking for both sides. It's not over until there's justice on both sides. You can save an awful lot of lives if you use nonviolent means instead and come to some kind of solution that provides justice for both peoples.
I guess the biggest conflict right now, at least in the eyes of America, is the global war on terror. But shouldn't Americans be terrified at the possible retaliation of, I guess, the violent retaliation from our previous victims? I mean, we have a lot of blood in our hands, and who are we to teach nonviolence?
You can choose to live in fear all the time, or you can choose to look at what is happening with terrorism and what things are triggering it and fueling it. We have to look at issues of justice and say, what can we do to make the situation in countries that are at high risk and in our own countries, what can we do to ensure that people are treated justly and fairly, that everyone has an opportunity to earn a living, to have a job, to raise a family in peace and safety?
One of the paradoxes, I guess, that comes out of the nonviolent approach is this idea of supporting the troops. Is it possible to be a proponent of nonviolence and still support our troops?
It certainly is, and we do support the troops because they are out there following orders, but what we don't support is the orders that they're being given. We believe that there is a definite need for peace-building and for peacekeeping forces under the United Nations, but it must be under the United Nations. It must have the support of the local people, must have the support of the region. It must be acting on principle rather than on orders from one particular government where the purpose isn't entirely clear.
You state in your book that there are, I guess, two superpowers in the world, one being America and the other being global public opinion. But when two sides can see the same events so differently, what is the first thing that each must do in order to reach a compromise? And how can you stop them from dehumanizing each other?
What a wonderful question. Thank you. The second superpower of world public opinion, I call civil society, and that's all of us who are working in the nonprofit sector. We're not in government, we're not in the military, we're not in big corporations. What we are is the conscience that supports society. So a healthy society has a strong government that is representative of people and accountable. It's got a good economy that, again, is fair and just and gives people opportunities. But it also has a strong civil society that brings conscience to bear on government and business and says, these particular projects that you are planning are simply not based in justice and caring and building community and saving the ecology of the planet. So our role in civil society is not always to confront government with placards and letter writing, although often we have to do that, but it's also to bring new ideas to government and say, these are ways that you could accomplish these ends, and you can do it in a more cooperative way, and you can do it in a way that will build solidarity in our communities.
If you're just joining us, this is Voices of Our World, and we're talking with Mary Wynne Ashford about her new book, Enough Bloodshed, 101 Solutions to Violence, Terror, and War. In order to peacefully resolve many conflicts, it is important that we understand ourselves as well as our adversary. The way in which our society is structured has a tremendous amount of influence on our approach to any given problem. In America, a substantial portion of our budget is spent on the military. And as the saying goes, when you only have a hammer, everything begins to look like a nail. By re-evaluating our priorities at home, we just might be able to help spread peace abroad. We continue our discussion on the issue of nonviolent conflict resolution with Mary Wynne Ashford.
It seems like the emotion that's behind a lot of these conflicts is this all-too-human desire for revenge. How do you eliminate the desire for revenge amongst the people who feel they've been wronged, who really believe that punishing another people is the way to solve the conflict?
It's so difficult, isn't it? When you think of where people have used something like the Truth and Reconciliation Commission that was used in South Africa and surprisingly has now been used in about 26 other countries, you wonder how people can face those who committed murder or atrocities and torture and so on their own family, and yet the families are able to say, yes, now that we know all of the facts and you have admitted to it, we are now ready to live together again. And in some of those cases, the people do go on. They're charged with murder and so on, the perpetrators. And in other cases, they're simply brought back into the community. It's something I hope, if I were in that circumstance, I would have that personal strength. But my goodness, when I read these stories, I don't know if I could do it. And there's even a website called theforgivenessproject.com that tells these stories.
One of the ways, I guess, you suggest in your book to resolve conflicts is to lessen the growing gap between rich and poor. But how can we do that tangibly without having to depend on the altruism of the rich?
That's a tough question in your country and mine and in Europe, where the gap between the rich and poor has grown absolutely enormous. And it does mean that the public have to vote in elected officials who are willing to address that gap. It means taxing the rich. It means taxing the corporations. It's a restructuring of society.
But with all the money spent on the military-industrial complex, it seems like that's where the money is. How do you convince people that there is actually a possibility of self-betterment and earning money from cooperating with each other instead of competing with each other?
When the United States is spending $500 billion a year on the military, you have to really wonder how the country can shift, because that means a huge number of your population are dependent on the military employment through the military industries. And it's going to have to be a very carefully thought through process to demilitarize the economy and say all of these companies can be producing things that are of social benefit instead of producing weapons. We could deal with pollution. We could deal with health care. We could deal with Head Start programs for children. We could deal with drug programs. There is so much need. We could deal with poverty, not only in North America, but all around the world, if we took the money out of this enormous mill of spending that goes into the military. It's $1 trillion worldwide, and about half of that is from the U.S.
In your research for the book, and in your attempt to put 101 solutions in effect to stop violence, terror, and war, was there any conflict that you saw and said, you know, this one can't be solved? Was there any ever a moment of skepticism, or do you really feel that humans have it in our nature to cooperate with one another, despite history?
We have it in our nature to be oppressive and violent and to kill people. I think that each of us has a very dark side, but at the same time, we have this other side, and the other side can come out. In every conflict that I investigated, I discovered that there were people on the ground working like crazy to try to resolve it nonviolently. There are women in Somalia who have gone back and forth between warring factions, and there are Israelis and Palestinians. There are more than 1,000 organizations that are joint, Israeli and Palestinian, in Israel, where the people are trying to work together and bring about a just resolution of that conflict. That's what gives me hope, is to know that everywhere those people are popping up. I mean, one of the things that gave me the most hope when I started working in the disarmament movement was that Mikhail Gorbachev arose out of the oppression of the Soviet Union. It was unbelievable. But he wasn't by himself. He didn't come up as sort of a single star. There were thousands of people already working to change their system, and he simply was the one that came to the surface.
Is there a website we can contact you at?
You can contact me at earthfuture.com.
Well, I want to thank you for being on the show today. Your optimism is already rubbing off on me. I really appreciate it. Thank you once again, Mary Wynne.
Thanks so much, Michael.
Tell us what you think. Can true peace be brought about through violence? Email us at radio@maryknoll.org or go to our website, www.voicesofourworld.org. Just click on Contact Us or call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. Well, that's all for this week, and thanks for listening. Anthony Arnov and Mary Wynne Ashford are just two of the voices of our world. I'm your host for this week's show, Eileen Bott. This show was produced by Michael R. Jones. Our website is www.voicesofourworld.org, where you can listen, learn more about today's guests and topics, answer our weekly question, or subscribe to our podcast. Please go to www.voicesofourworld.org. To learn more about Mary Knoll or try Mary Knoll magazine in English or Spanish, call 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. And please join us next time for more Voices of Our World.